Welcome back to the Ed Morrissey Show. I am delighted to introduce to you T.S. Dixon, who has written a new book, The Woke Mind Virus. And there's lots of different things to unpack in his new book, including ideological sickness, the globalist agenda, how you cure the woke mind virus, and all sorts of other things. T.S., welcome to the show. Great to have you with us.
Ed, thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
So first off, let's introduce you a little bit, because I'm not familiar with your work. I'm curious as to how you came to the idea of writing a book on the woke mind virus. Now, this is something that has been obviously in the news in the last few years, part of the culture wars. Really, honestly, we've kind of started, I think, starting to kind of turn a corner on wokeness and the absurdity of discrimination as a cure for discrimination. I mean, at least I'm hoping we're coming to an end to that. How did you come to this topic, and what prompted you to write the book?
Well, I've been politically active as a conservative for more than 20 years, and I vote. You know, I stay informed. I consume lots of news. I usually have a good handle on what's going on, and I'm an avid researcher. You know, I've been researching for more than 20 years, and as my wife and I were just watching through COVID and how totalitarian a lot of the leftist regimes were getting in the West, and then after COVID with the 2020 election and the question marks there, and then in the 2024 election, how they started to weaponize government, use the FBI, use the state court system, and then use the Secret Service to withhold protection, and you know, the whole thing in Butler, it just started to look worse and worse, that we were headed down a very dangerous path that we might not ever come back from, as we've seen many amazing countries go down that path before. Russia was once an amazing country before the Bolsheviks, China before Mao, Venezuela before Castro, Maduro and Chavez, and Cuba before Castro. And so I just was seeing what was happening in the country and growing more and more concerned about it. And then my wife became pregnant with our first son. And that was sort of the switch that flipped, where we just both went, we have to do more. And she encouraged me to take all of the stuff I was always talking about and put it together in a blog or something. And so I decided to write a book. And that became this book, The Woke Mind Viruses.
So you say viruses too, because I think I introduced it as woke mind virus. You're saying woke mind viruses. So I'm curious as how you break down the taxonomy.
Sure, I can do that.
Yeah, please do.
Yeah, so I identify four mind viruses, and by mind virus, all I mean is a lethal, dangerous political ideology that spreads rapidly through a society. That's the definition. That's my definition of mind virus. And so there are four such lethal political ideologies that have infected the West. The first is leftism. Then you have liberalism, wokeism, which, you know, is the most popular one right now. And then the fourth one is very hidden, very covert. It's called globalism. And so these are the four ideologies that we're contending with today. And the way an ideology works, my definition of an ideology is that it's a set or a collection of beliefs that forms a view of the world and also declares a mission, especially a political ideology. And so you can have great ideologies like Christianity or Judaism or constitutionalism from Jefferson, great ideologies. Or you can have really deadly ones with lethal results like communism, Nazism, for instance, fascism. These have really terrible results. And so it's a disease of a society that can kill a lot of people.
So T.S., let me ask you this, because I think that's an interesting way to break this down, right? First off, I think that underlying most of these is Marxism. And that might be the most pernicious of what you would call a woke mind virus, because Marxism really undergirds most of this. And it's such a discredited, in practice, it's so discredited that it keeps having to pop up as other things, you know? And I'm wondering what your view is on Marxism. And let's start there before I get to the other thought that just
absolutely So what I do in the book, because I was very curious about the point of origin, the moment that these things all started, and their founding fathers, their core beliefs. So boiling down these complex sort of, you know, ethereal set of beliefs down to like their top five beliefs, their core beliefs. And then you understand their thought process and finally their tactics, how they operate. So I do that breakdown for each one of these four ideologies. And then I do that for conservatism and constitutionalism. So I do that for ours and do our untold history. So that's the bulk of the book. And then I go into solutions and cures. So Marxism, you're dead right. So what we had, the modern world comes from the free world. The free world comes from 1776, and it was preceded by two movements, two ideological movements. One was called the Great Awakening, which was a spreading, mass spreading of the salvation experience brand of Christianity all over the United States, England, and then into Europe. And then you had the European Enlightenment, which was this new quest for truth where we were emerging from the Dark Ages. We were emerging from pseudoscience and false beliefs, and we were searching for the truth. And so that was the European Enlightenment that created the modern sciences, art, literature, education, and whatnot, and governance, modern governance. So Thomas Jefferson took all those streams, put them together, and wrote the Declaration of Independence with the Founding Fathers and also helped write the Constitution. And so that created, that framework created our ideology and created our system of government, which created freedom, created the modern world through the Industrial Revolution and whatnot. Now, then there was a reaction to that in the 1800s where society swung the other way, and the people that didn't agree with these ideas of the modern free world had to form a response, an argument with Jefferson, so to speak, and his intellectual forebears. And so I call that the Dark Enlightenment. And it starts with Charles Darwin, which we're taught in middle school as a hero, and that he had this brilliant theory of natural selection. But he's really the father of scientific atheism, which is the ability to write God out of the story, out of the concept of reality, which then gets rid of morality, the concept of the afterlife, good or evil, and right and wrong, and also truth. And so then he's followed up by Friedrich Nietzsche out of Germany, and he gives quite a lot of thought and philosophy around the concept if Darwin is correct, then what are the results of that, the consequences of that? And so upon the shoulders of Darwin and Nietzsche, then you have Karl Marx, who then takes all of those ideas and forms a blueprint for what to do with it. So the idea is called will to power. So basically, Darwin teaches there's no God, and therefore Nietzsche says, well, if there's no God, then there's no right and wrong. There's no purpose to life, which is called nihilism. There's right. No good and evil. There's no truth. And therefore, the only thing that's left for man is the will to power. And Marx says, well, if all there is will to power, let me give you a 10-step program to achieve will to power, to fulfill your destiny, according to Nietzsche. That's Marxism. Communist Manifesto and Das Kapital.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. And so what we're talking about is two different, almost really just two different threads, right? There's ordered liberty, which has some variants, right? We have a federal system of ordered liberty. There's parliamentary systems of ordered liberty, in which the point is supposed to be to protect the, what Jefferson wrote is the unalienable rights from a creator.
Yes.
They were very ambiguous about that. It was definitely a creator. It was definitely a God, but it fits within practically any
religion. Yeah.
Religion, right? Except for atheism, which is, I think, a religion.
Correct.
And then against that, you have what I would call authoritarian rule. And that has many different variants. One of which, technocracies, which is kind of what we're actually seeing in the West. Then you have just sheer authoritarianism, which is more in the East. That's China. That's to a large extent now Russia too. It's been Russia back and forth, for the last century. Well, really for almost forever. And certainly in developing countries, you have the same struggle, right, between ordered liberty and authoritarianism. And Marxism appeals to authoritarians because I believe it it underscores the necessity of a top-down control of people's choices, right? That's really what it is. Should people make their own choices, or should people have their choices dictated by others? And technocracies are very much the, you know, not the ordered liberty type of thing. And we're sliding into that, right? Now, that's not necessarily an issue about wokeism, but I think that this is an important point to make when we're talking about wokeism, because what we're saying in the way that woke is structured, and I mean, you may define it a little differently than I do. I'll give you my definition,
sure.
And then we'll discuss a little bit.
Yeah.
Again, T.S. Dixon, author of The Woke Mind Viruses. So be sure to check out the book. And I don't know if you've got a book there, you should probably hold it up for the camera. I don't have one physically with me, so I can't hold it up.
you can get it on Amazon or tsdixon.com.
And hey, tsdixon.com, there you go. And by the way, fabulous orange cover. Not too many books have that. You'll be able to recognize it right away when you go to the bookstore.
Yeah.
So, but it's important because my definition of woke is that what are considered to be immutable characteristics are what define human beings, right? And in a system in which you are doing, you know, you're doing group justice on the basis of immutable characteristics, you will always need a top-down authority to settle the disputes. It's tribalism, which requires a top-down authority. And the more tribalism you can manage to generate out of that, the more brutal that top-down authority has to be. It becomes self-justifying. The violence becomes self-justifying. That's my definition of woke in general, because I know people say, what do you mean by woke? Well, this is what I mean by woke.
Yeah.
Tribalism based on immutable characteristics. And I think that that definition holds up, but I'm curious to
sure.
see yours is and how you see that working into these authoritarian structures.
Yeah, well, you're right. You're right. What about broad? That's a very broad definition of it, looking at it from it by experiencing it. So if I go back to the source material and the founding fathers, so woke starts in the 1920s in Frankfurt, Germany, with the Frankfurt School, which is a group of professors that are all communists that were very upset that Germany and America and England did not fall to communism like Russia had. And I think it was 1917, roughly around there with Lenin. And so they were trying to understand why this happened. And the reason was because Teddy Roosevelt and his counterparts had these reforms in the late 1800s that was the original Christian progressive movement that got rid of child labor, got fair wages, a 40-hour work week. And all of a sudden, workers became very prosperous in the West. And because of this, when the communists came around with Marxist theories in the West, they didn't want to overthrow the system. They liked the system. They could afford a house and pay for their kids and education and whatnot. But in Russia, it was still very brutal. And so the workers revolted. And so they realized, you know, Marx's original theory was the idea, there's two parts to Marxism, the gospel of Marxism, is that first you need to have oppressor and oppressed, which is the proletariat, which is the underclass, versus the bourgeoisie, that's the rich oppressor, the rich versus the poor. You need class warfare. So class warfare is the first half. Then that's the problem. Then the solution is social justice, which is sweeping in a socialist government to overthrow the bourgeoisie and give power to the proletariat through the vehicle of communism. That's the sales pitch. Well, that sales pitch failed. And so they had to come up with a new sales pitch in the Frankfurt School. And they realized in the West, there were other vector points to attack. The feminist movement, how women didn't have the right to vote or were, you know, oppressed somehow by the patriarchy, the oppression of racism on minorities. There was underclass groups like homosexuals and transgenders and whatnot. And so they said, let's attack those points. So let's have a new proletariat and bourgeoisie. And so the new proletariat will say are women, and the new bourgeoisie are men oppressing them, the patriarchy. The new bourgeoisie is going to be whites, and the new proletariat are going to be colonial minorities in the Europe and Britain, and in America, it'll be the blacks, right? And so you have a new class warfare. And same thing now with the LGBT thing, where you have lesbian, gay, bisexual, trans versus straight, white, gender normative people, like males and females, they're the oppressors, right? So that's the sales pitch of woke. It's called cultural Marxism. It's Marxism at the attack vector of the cultural weak points versus rich versus poor, which is traditional Marxism, traditional class warfare. So that's how I would define it. It's a new form of cultural Marxism to attack the West, if that lines up with your thinking.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that that's the way it's been employed, right? And in my mind, it's no different than discriminatory systems that had, you know,
sure,
other types of, you know, beneficiaries, right? And that's one of the reasons why you try to fight against discrimination, right? So you don't fall into these tribalistic tendencies that require governments to enforce those rules. And, you know, I could look back at Jim. I know this is a little off the topic, and I don't want to go too far down this path.
No problem. Yeah.
Jim Crow was a great example of this. It required government to enforce the rules of tribalism. Right. It's the reason why you had Jim Crow laws was because governments forced people to behave in discriminatory ways. And you couldn't get around that. You couldn't change the culture of discrimination until you got government to stop discriminating and stop enforcing those laws. And it took a long time for the culture to change, but they finally forced the government to change first and to stop imposing racism on their citizens. So
right.
So this is I'm looping in a bunch of frustrations with wokeism that I see is basically repetitions of the same type of tribalism that we've experienced as human beings. And I think one of the big pluses of the Jeffersonian approach is that it liberates us literally from tribalism.
Yeah, Jefferson was all about human rights, natural rights from John Locke, and small limited government. Now, were there cultural issues in his day, like slavery and whatnot, that they had not graduated from and been liberated from yet? Yeah, that's true. But in the modern era, like things like Jim Crow, you know, these are laws enforced by the Democrat Party and then taken over by the liberal establishment when they took over in the 1930s. And so you have this claim that they're here to free and liberate people, but always they're actually the oppressor. They're creating the problem that then they are offering you the solution to. And that's the con. How that ties into what you said before, how we're slipping in the West into technocracy, that's where this fourth, more cloaked and shadowy ideological movement comes into play. And that is globalism. And that is really eugenics, cultural Darwinism, Marxism for the ultra rich. And that is an ideology that not only seeks to take a country like Marxism seeks to take over countries through the vehicle of revolution. But globalism is like in its name, it seeks to have a global revolution and take over the world, forming a world government that is dictated by a high-tech control grid that they have been beta testing and doing R&D in the great country of China through the Communist Chinese Party. You know, that's why we've been moving our industries over there. They did many trade deals in the, 50s, 60s, 70s to move a lot of our industry over there to finance them through trade deficits. And then we gave a lot of our IP patent technologies and whatnot to them that we spent billions of dollars in our company, spent billions of dollars developing, handed it to them for free so that they could fast track the development of this high-tech control grid to dominate their population and then prove it out, run the beta testing, so that then when it's ready for market, then the globalists can franchise it all over the world and bring it to a Western country near you, perhaps where you live. That's globalism.
Yep. All right. So I know we don't have a ton of time here because this is a great conversation, by the way.
Yeah.
Having a great time with this. This is right up my alley. So I'm really having a conversation. But I do want to get back to the book. And the book talks about solutions to this, talks about how to fight back against global the woke mind viruses. I was almost going to say the globalist mind viruses. That's one thing we're going to discuss. Sure. The woke mind viruses, it's the name of the book. And you do have a couple of chapters in here that deal with this. One is just called The Cure for the Woke Mind Viruses. So it's pretty straightforward. Yep. And the other is the anti-corruption agenda. And I think that we are getting a lot more attuned to the corruption agenda based on some of the things that we've seen over the last couple of months coming from the efforts to trace the money from American government into a lot of these NGOs that are trying this type of stuff. But without giving too much away, because we really want people to buy your book. We don't want to give away everything.
There's too much in there to give away in 30 minutes. Trust me.
Yeah. I'm glad to hear that. I don't want to be doing spoilers for movies or for books. I just want to whet people's appetites for them. Sure. So give us a little taste of what you see for the cure for the woke mind virus. Is it stuff that we're doing right now? In fact, over the last couple of months here, or are we on the right track to do this?
We are. Oh yeah, we are on the right track. Thank God. You know, the cure for the woke mind viruses is in one phrase, what I call massive institutional reform. Okay. Massive institutional reform, a complete overhaul of a Western country and the institutions that operate there. And that includes businesses, agencies, schools, churches, denominations, things like that. And so we're all responsible for the reforms. It just starts at the federal government, national government, and down from there. This occurs in a pattern of four stages. So I could go back through history, but I just use case studies like Elon Musk with Twitter, Donald Trump's first term, Argentina, El Salvador with Bukele, and a few others. And I show this pattern of this is how it works. And the pattern is to rediscover. So it's a mass awakening and education of the people and the conservative party in the movement in that country. The second part is reclamation or reclaim. I think what we have here in this recent election is not a revolution, because we didn't tear down our country and build a new form of government. That's a revolution. What we have is a reclamation. We reclaimed the government that was ours to begin with and had been commandeered and hijacked. That's a reclamation. The third is reforms, which we're in that stage now in America. Other countries are yet to even enter stage one or two, like Germany or England. They're just in stage one still, where they're learning and they're gathering their populist movement. And then stage four, which is the most important, is redress of grievances. That's where, great, hey, we just uncovered Podesta and all these other people that are, what are they doing with these tens and hundreds of billions of dollars? The USAID, all this fraud and waste and abuse. Okay, it's great to identify that, but now who was involved? Who are the people? We have the evidence. Now let's go investigate and indict some people, and let's have arrests and convictions, and let's punish crime. You know, if we have laws for us, let's have laws for them too. We have laws for everybody. We're not a nation of men, but a nation of laws. And so you have to administer justice. That's this fourth step. And that's the pattern of successfully achieving a reform in your country. But it's not just that. Also, you have to have this ideological enlightenment. And like we saw in the 1700s, you know, we are a Christian society. Western society is Christian society. We have many faiths that practice within, underneath the wings and branches that we provide. But the tree trunk of our civilization is the salvation experience and the Christian experience. And so we have to rediscover that as well. And so, once in 100 years, once in, 70, 80 years, you have these movements that is an upswelling and a restoration also of the spiritual faith of Western civilization. And so I believe that needs to come as well, because otherwise I think the reform movement will be short-lived. The corruption will come right back in, and the degradation of the youth and society and the belief systems will fall apart. And then we won't have many defenses against it. So in other words, that's how I prescribe for the cure. And yes, I think we're doing great. I think Trump and Elon are on the right track. What's funny is I finished the book in August, and I wrote this, and I case studied Trump and Musk before they were even working together or talking about working together. And then I lay out in the 10th section of the book a legislative agenda. And he has, by fiat, already by executive order, done about 85-90% of what I suggested he do. And this was, long before I had understood. I know he had some things on his website, but I was just going through the reforms I thought were necessary, including get rid of the Department of Education, get rid of the CIA, reform the National Security Act, Espionage Act, the Patriot Act, things with the Federal Reserve and whatnot. So I'm amazed that how much he's done. And now he's got to cement this in legislative agenda, which is what I go into in chapter 10, where I say, hey, if they're going to use omnibus to package everything together in a single bill for spending, why don't we use omnibus to package all our reforms together into one anti-corruption act and get it through Congress with one vote? You know, that's what I recommend to him, because he only has 2 years before the midterms.
Right.
And he really needs to get it in before then.
Well, you know, I'm actually a little bit cheerier about that than I was, I think, about 3 months ago. Because I was saying, he's only got 2 years. Because yes. The midterms are going to come along, and he's probably going to lose at least one chamber of Congress. Now I'm not so sure, because Democrats seem intent on shooting themselves in the foot over and over and over again. And Republicans, it hasn't taken much from Republicans to get them to do that. And I'm actually seriously a little bit more optimistic about 2026 than I had been. He might have 4 years, but after that, of course, it's going to have to go to somebody else. Part of what is going to sort of clear the path for that, though, too, because once you shut down all of the funding that's been going into NGOs, and I'll tell you, I'm not sure if you're familiar with the Canadian scandal ad scam from 20 years ago.
Not.
I've been making this point over and over again. I had a really small role in publicizing it back then when I was at my previous blog, Captain's Quarters. Mm-hmm. But basically, it was actually kind of a neat little grift that they had going. They had the Canadians had passed a program, had voted for a program called the Sponsorship Act, right? Or sponsorship program. And the idea was to make Quebecers feel better about being in Canada, because there's always been a separatist movement in Quebec. And it's fairly sure. strong. Different culture, French culture versus British culture, you know. And it's, you know, it was actually not a bad idea at the time. They were going to take $200 million and they were going to spend it on sponsoring cultural events that made people feel better about being Canadians, right, in Quebec. And they're going to do advertising and that sort of thing. And, you know, pretty, you know, is a, you know, $200 million, not that big of a deal. And it would, and, you know, it'd be barely a blip for America, probably not that much bigger for Canada. But what happened was that the Liberal Party, which was the party in power that when it passed, was basically giving the money to people who are giving it right back to the Liberal Party, right? They were contractors who were doing work, who were big contributors to the Liberal Party. And it was this big grift to keep the Liberals.
Yes.
And it got exposed, right? People went to jail. People don't remember this, but people went to prison over that. And the Conservatives took over the government a few months after it got exposed. And again, I had a very small role in just the exposure part of it. And then after that, the Canadians took care of business themselves. And I've been saying that as these things have been coming out from Doge and other sources about where all this money's going, the $2 billion that went to Stacey Abrams that supposedly were for buying appliances, you know, for
right.
Households.
I'm sure they bought a lot of appliances with that.
I'm sure. That all of this is an American ad scam. It's a scam. Yeah. Sending the money back to NGOs that employ activists that agitate for Democrats and organize for Democrats. Mm-hmm.
And Act Blue. Yeah.
Yeah, Act Blue. Well, Act Blue is kind of a separate thing, but you know, that's coming to an end too. They'll just create a different one.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
But once you cut the money off from, you know, the federal government going to all these NGOs, I'm actually somewhat optimistic that that's going to have an impact on how elections are conducted from this point forward. I mean, that's, I'm sure, part of what you're talking about with the anti-corruption agenda, but I'm just,
yes.
I know that you finished this, you had to have finished this book months ago, and I'm just,
oh yeah.
How, you know, vindicated do you feel about seeing it?
Well, at first I went, man, they're doing all the stuff. I mean, did they need to even read the book? But then I go, everyone's going to retaliate just because Trump's in power and he's giving edicts to get woke out of different things, and they're finding corruption. The corruption goes deep, and these groups have been in power for 100 years. They're not going to go away easily. This is a fight. I mean, last time when they felt threatened, we had a virus sort of some mysteriously escaped from a coronavirus lab in Wuhan. There's things they're willing to do. And I wouldn't put anything past them especially when you're doing things like uncovering corruption. You know, I have a whole section in my book on globalism when you get to the globalist tactics. And one of them is I call OPM, which stands for other people's money. You know, the grandparents of the globalists ran the opium wars in China. So it was a play on words. And today the new opium is our money. And they use our money. They used opium to destroy the Chinese people and dominate their markets and enrich their families. And today they use our money to shear us like sheep and steal our money through various scams. And I go through the top 20 scams that globalists use to finance their agenda out of our pockets. And many of those were part of the USAID scam. There's many with the NGOs. I go through extensively on the NGO scam. It's very simple how it works, like what you're describing with Quebec. And I saw this in San Francisco when I was working with state-funded real estate there. Same thing. And so I go through 20 of these scams. Now, there's quite a few more they haven't uncovered yet that I detail in the book. And so I hope Elon and Trump and his team would eventually read this book and Pam Bondi and investigate some of these other angles. But the most important thing that they're doing with this is they're defunding the corruption, but they're also defunding the globalist agenda. Same thing with pulling out of the WHO, restricting the funding to the United Nations and certain councils that we sit on. I think we need to defund NATO, stop funding NATO altogether. These are all wings of the globalist infrastructure that was put in place after 1945 at Bretton Woods. And so we've had this globalist prototype in place in advance of the next version they want to bring in. And it's crucial that we defund it at all costs. I mean, American taxpayers, we're paying for 80, 90% of it. It's got to stop.
All right. Well, that's as much of the book as I'm going to let you reveal, because people buy the book. The Woke Mind Viruses by T.S. Dixon. Great conversation with T.S. Dixon. And man, you know, I know you're going to be busy selling the book and all that kind of stuff. I'm going to come back and do this again some other time.
I would love to come back. Yeah, it was great, great conversing with you. And I, if I could say one more thing for people, yeah. I hope they go out and get the book. I will fast track or fill in the puzzle pieces. It's an easy read. It's a simple framework that I provide. But the other important thing I want to express is if you have teenagers ages 12, 13 or older in middle school, high school or college or young 20s, get them a copy of this book and insist that they read it. Require them to read this book because it will undo years of cultural miseducation and indoctrination. And I believe we'll free a lot of young people's minds from this woke nonsense and these lies that they've been educated with. So please, please, please get this for your kids, teenagers, college students, young adults. Please get it for them as well.
Excellent. T.S. Dixon, tsdixon.com is his website. So check out tsdixon.com. You can get the book there. You can get it through Amazon. We'll have the link in the show post, I'm sure. But in the meantime, just go out Google it if you want to Google it. The Woke Mind Viruses, T.S. Dixon. T.S., thank you so much for spending some time with us today.
Thanks, Ed. I appreciate it.